We're back. Oh my goodness. Yes, clap. It's me, Dr. Camerata, the co-host of the previously Golden Nuggets podcast, and now, fortunately and unfortunately for CJ, the Across the Continuum podcast, as we push forward with our endeavors to take over the world. It's been almost a year since we podcasted, and we're happy to have Dr. Jacob Templar here to usher us back into blessing the ear holes of all of our audience. And so first, let's say hi to CJ. CJ, how are you?
What's going on? I am good. Trying to figure out life, day-to-day basis, new babies, business things, and all the things. But yeah, I'm good.
Congrats on the new baby, Bennett.
One month today. Bennett is 1 month old.
Really?
Yep.
He will be carrying your last name into the future indefinitely.
Damn right he will. I'm so pumped about
which,
it.
It's such a weird thing. Like, I hope I have a son just for that.
Yeah, it's like our primal like instincts. Thing. It's like moving the bloodline and needle forward, you know?
Yeah. What's the line from The Office? The gears of history are moved by blood or something like that.
Oh, I don't know. That sounds perfect.
And then we have Jake Templar. Jake, I feel like you're one of the OG physical therapists on Instagram. Welcome to the podcast. Please introduce yourself in any and all fashions that you feel comfortable with.
I don't know. I'll give the quick and dirty that most people give. Like, so I went to Utica College, graduated in 2016 with my doctorate in physical therapy, went there for undergrad too. Played football there for a semester, didn't really play or anything, but was on the team technically. Played rugby there, so that's like a bit of my sport background. As I played football in high school, then I played rugby, and then from there I just really liked weightlifting, even sometimes more than playing, even though in high school I was on a pretty darn good team. And then from there, I've done a couple powerlifting meets. Got my OCS and MDT, McKenzie, worked with the strength guys for about 3 years. So I've rehabbed dozens upon dozens of internationally qualified powerlifters, national champions, world champions, Hall of Famers, lots of world record holders. And now currently I'm with ATP Performance, where I've expanded my role a little bit past just the rehab side, and I'm doing full coaching too for more of our powerlifting. And I'm the chief science officer on top of that.
Yeah, I was gonna lay that final flex on top of that flex pile. What goes into being chief science officer?
My role is essentially doing what I would normally do anyways and just disseminating it to other people.
This is just like calling out everybody on the team to make sure that things are smooth sailing.
Pretty much what I've been doing is, like, since I read so much, I'll just take the papers that I read and synthesize them down into like about a page, and like, here's what actually matters to your coaching, and then send that out every month.
You send out the newsletter.
Yep.
Nice. You know what you should do is send that out to anybody who will sign up for it.
Yeah, I was trying. I'm getting ahead. So after I finish the next one, I'm actually already like 2 months ahead. So of where I need to be for our team. So I'll get one more month ahead, and then.
I'm ahead by like 1 day right now. Like, I have my post for Instagram tomorrow. And I'm ahead in no sense of the word. One other thing I thought I would mention is pragmatic rehab principles. I haven't seen that go on in a while. It came out really quickly and then it stopped. What happened?
I don't know. Me Iliad and Alexis have been trying to get onto that stuff, but Iliad's had a lot going on in his personal life and with work and stuff. So
sure. Yeah, whatever. Cool. So we ask you to come on to basically tell us what programming periodization is, and to have a discussion, because one of the biggest modules for Across the Continuum, one of our biggest goals is to try and make this seeming mountain of information or different threads that can be pulled in this space into a more digestible thing to do. And I know that for some years after getting out of physical therapy school, I still don't really know what it took to write a program or what programming was. I know CJ definitely knew what it was from before physical therapy school, but personally, I went through programs and I heard periodization and I, you know, knew, I guess, what it was, but I didn't really know what it was. And with recent conversations with other physical therapists, they don't really know what it is. And so I wanted to come on and kind of just lay out the big basics about what periodization and programming is. And I figured that you, being a gigantic brain with legs, might be a good person to have on here for that. So yeah.
Yeah. I made modules for my own courses recently on it, and it made my brain go a little bit numb.
Well, hopefully we won't make anybody else's brain go a little bit numb. CJ, when did you know what programming was?
Probably really, I was an intern in the collegiate strength conditioning world. And so, I mean, that's like where, that's the only thing that you learn, right? Most of the interns are like ex-athletes. So they kind of know how to lift and they know what to do. But, you know, I was a collegiate athlete for a short time, but it came from like more of the physiology side. Most of the interns are like grunts and they're just trying to get a degree, and they might go and take their master's and become like a master student teacher. I can't think of what they call that, but it's like the general flow. So that was the plan, right? So in the internship, it was very educationally driven. It wasn't just like making sure football got through their four workouts like every, like throughout the summer, right? Which is terrible in and of itself, but we actually had breakdowns and like, you know, learned who Charlie Francis was, which is the guy that basically like created power and speed training and like what it generally looks like. And so that's when I learned. So that would have been 2012, summer of 12, way after, like even after we had gone through Essentials, the CSCS book, because, you know, it tells you and you learn your, you know, your pyramid and 3x8s, et cetera. And it can be as simple as that, but really digging into sports specifics, even positional specifics within the sport, that's when I learned it. And then CrossFit just kind of blew all that up, and it's totally different in the CrossFit world. It doesn't make any sense. It's like, it's just, you know, you just have to train everything all the time. It's like, blah, it's like hodgepodge, yeah, craziness all the time. So yeah, so we'll go 10 years.
Yeah, I definitely want to maybe get into the differences between I guess quote unquote regular programming periodization and CrossFit programming periodization later. But Jake, I'm just going to kick it to you. When you hear periodization, what comes to mind? Like, what is your explanation for that?
I mean, I just tell people it's how you plan and structure your training, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the definition. Like, yeah. And when I learned that, I was like, oh, okay, that's not as bad. There are certain variables though, like very repeatable ones. What do those include in a regular program or periodized program?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest levers are going to be your volume, your frequency, and your intensity. And I've been reading a lot more about that recently, like, because volume is the, I mean, I wrote the that guest article for you guys.
Yep.
Where volume for health outcomes, for hypertrophy, for strength gains, for cardiovascular adaptation, whatever it is, volume seems to be the biggest lever to pull. And then yeah, frequency is just trying to get it so you can accommodate whatever the volume you need to see the adaptation you want.
Sure.
And then intensity makes it more or less specific, depending on if your goal is to be, you know, strength or I guess hypertrophy, even though there's some new research that says you don't need to be in necessarily moderate rep ranges.
Yeah.
I'm still super skeptical on that new stuff. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. It's like, yeah, you can get the same strength doing eights. I'm like, well, then why is no one do eights? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah. I feel like it's oversimplified. There's definitely something there, and I hope there's still a lot of information that comes out to it, but yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I am like,
you're good.
Reading it, I was like, you're just like shit on 50 years of, you know, strength and conditioning research, which is fine. but like it's just such a big grasp to say that 8s and 12s will yield some of the same strength responses as 1s and 3s. And it's like, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of nervous system issues that like are just not being accounted for there. And it's like, you should never touch 25% higher. How are you, know, and some people do it. I see it in CrossFit all the time. There's like, they live at 70% and they PR. And I'm like, if I don't touch over 90%, not a chance that weight's even going to budge. Like, that's just me. So anyways,
I was gonna look at my last block, because like I'm the type of person that I have to look and see what my last training block, what my percentages were. But like, I, if I sit between 75 and 85%, that's where I get the most.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that live there. A lot of the heavier, like your higher Olympic classes, that's where they live, because they can't train at 90%. They'll get flattened. They don't recover that well. But like your lower weight classes seem to be able to be very comfortable in the 90s all the time. There's, in females also tolerate higher intensity and higher volume much, much better. I'm very much more like that. Like, I feel comfortable hitting 90% often. Living in the 75 to 85 personally doesn't do much for me, right? Mm-hmm. Besides like technique refinement or something like that.
Well, and I think the interesting thing is there's been newer studies too, like the systematic reviews with Hickmont, and then I forget the lead authors for the other ones, but they'll be in the newsletters when I get those out. Because they were showing like similar hypertrophy at lower RPE training. So you could do like RPE 3, but like with your 70 to, you know, 90%, just doing like singles and doubles, doing clusters and alternative set structures. And they're showing, well, as long as the volumes match, it doesn't seem to matter, which makes sense mechanical tension wise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's not get away from ourselves here, because I am I could go down this rabbit hole, I think, a good bit. So let me summarize the variables here. We have volume, which is like sets and reps, as far as just in a session or throughout a time period, maybe like a week or so. The way you find out is sets times reps. And then you can even calculate what's called tonnage, right? Mm-hmm. If you bring in the load on the bar into that to see how much overall weight you're moving. Although I feel like tonnage is not something that I really see in a whole lot of programming, unless you're tracking really in-depth stuff, maybe some, you know, more brainy coaches do that sort of thing. So we have volume, and then frequency I usually define as like exposures to a stressor over a certain time period. And that time period can be a week or a month or a year. Although I guess in my maybe Olympics periodization examples, I would maybe look at years. But we have volume, frequency, intensity. Right, we were talking about 75%, 85%, 90%. That is percentages of a repetition max, one rep max, or a 3 rep max, or a 5 or 10 rep max, or any number of rep max, and a percentage of that number, the max being hopefully momentary muscular failure at that number. But also intensity can be subjective, where we use something like RPE or RIR, or rate of fatigue, which again is something that I know of, but haven't really ever seen anybody use that. And then the other one that I would probably say is like movement variation or movement selection. And those are really the only four topics that I think probably go into most programs. I don't know, Jake or CJ, are there other ones that I missed there?
If we're, you know, I think from the powerlifting and Olympic world, I think that's pretty accurate. CrossFit world does have like more parameters of like speed of rep and you know, like work, or like way more work rest stuff. And you know, the concepts of tonnage are pretty much doesn't make any sense in that whole world at all, right? Because we could do thrusters at an empty barbell, but you have to do 150 of them, and it's like, well, did you have, you know, 4,500 pounds, right? Like, that, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So I think from our traditional barbell sport world, I think that's pretty on point.
Yeah. Jake, did I miss anything?
I was going to say, like, the only thing I will do, like, within those two is, like, depending on like, say, how somebody's day is going, I might have them like match volume. And that's some of the only times I look at like tonnage really. Otherwise I'm looking at like the number of sets per session or per week or cycle within that, you know, given time frame really.
Yeah. Cool. So I think the other thing that I wanted to get into was I feel like the point of most of these things is to improve strength, although I'm sure that CJ will have and honestly I could have a rebuttal to that as well, but improve the specificity of some sort of adaptation. CJ, I feel like this would be a good question for you, but what are the different types of strength? Because I know that you stuck me through that attempt at taking some sort of OPEX training that I didn't understand very well at the time, and there were like 8 different types of strength. And so I think maybe talking about that for a little bit might be helpful too.
Sure. So this is like really digging in the CrossFit world. Okay. And so it's, you know, these things are defined much differently than they are in the powerlifting or weightlifting world, right? Because we have like your absolute strength and your absolute power, which would be your, you know, your lifts, potentially an Olympic lift or like all out sprints and things like that, like our traditional energy systems. And this is, but there's so much overlap in the world of CrossFit when it comes to training the barbell, because yes, it's great to have a 400-pound clean, but you'll most likely need to be able to move a percentage of that under a lot of fatigue. And so we have like strength endurance, power endurance, meaning you have to be able to express a lot of effort, work rest at high intensities, you know, over broad time. And so when you add, you don't have time as a driver in barbell training, but you do in CrossFit. And so it kind of creates these, I don't know, like subcategories of strength, right? And so it's like, strength endurance, power endurance, you know, which would be potentially like a back squat over broad time and a power snatch over broad time, or the ability to sustain 80% for long periods of time, lactate, which is, you know, just another subcategory of, are you strong enough to even pull the rower that hard for this amount of time? And so, it gets really muddy. Probably the easiest way to say it, but just think about it as, you know, we have our ability to train absolute, we have, which will help us obviously move through all of the other things. But at that point, there is a point where you're just strong enough, right? And you don't have to worry about that absolute number anymore. And you have to improve your ability to move percentage work often or efficiently, or even the very light percentage work, right? When you turn barbell training into aerobic work, which is a whole, just like almost a whole nother sport in and of itself.
Yes. I mean, it really is a whole different animal getting into the CrossFit programming stuff. And I still have so much to learn in that world. Bringing it back. All right. So we have our variables down. The point is to move towards a goal, usually in at least the powerlifting world and a good bit of the CrossFit world, is to improve strength in some aspect, right? There's multiple types of strength in the CrossFit world. There's really just one, I feel like, type of strength in the powerlifting world. The point is going to be to try and expose the person with this program to stressors to drive adaptation. And Jake, I feel like this might be a good time to go over like what drives adaptation and what does the most common models of our understanding of that look like?
Yeah. I mean, specifically for like absolute strength, it tends to be neuromuscular changes and neural adaptations. Being able to activate high threshold motor units at a certain like threshold capacity, like to be able to utilize that muscle in a more efficient way and like wear that pathway. So it's like looking at like the difference between like a forest versus like now there's a road through that forest. You want to make that road over time. And like that's where the biggest and best like skilled lifters, I guess you'd say, like a Taylor Atwood or you know, somebody like that would you know, have very well defined pathways where they can just do this so easily and activate things so well That's why they're so strong.
Right. They develop a very keen specificity to the rep ranges and the I guess velocities of what it is that they're training for that goal. I think the thing that helped me the most when learning about periodization and really like the application of stress to the human was that kind of like classic fitness fatigue model, where with the exposure to stressors, there's a positive and a negative outcome to that exposure, right? Positive would be fitness and performance. We call those probably training adaptations, right? Or positive ones at least. And then the negative would be fatigue, which I feel is a tough topic in and of itself, but that would be a negative outcome. And then those two things, that fitness and fatigue, are inverse related for the most part, right?
Yeah. For the most part, because then you have to, like, the newer model talks about outside variables too, like your sleeps, life stressors, all that stuff, all the stuff we talk about all together in the more biopsychosocial circles.
Yeah. And is there like a name for this new model or something that I should look into? No, it's just the updated fitness fatigue model.
Yeah, it's just an updated one. There was an article in like the British Journal of, like, I think it was sports medicine, or it was a sports medicine. And then they talked about that and like reviewed, like, okay, what were the previous ones and what do we know now, like, given that we've had advancement and understanding of like RPE, RIR, velocity-based training, and like how do we practically use those to like assess readiness and stuff? Because there's a lot of different ways you can do it, and most of them don't really relate very great to like powerlifting, yeah, per se. Like some of them, I think, maybe apply a little bit more for CrossFit or like Olympic lifting. Versus some of them don't seem to have as well of a carryover, versus like velocity based training seems to be like so far the best one. It's more precise, but RPE and RIR gets you like 80-90% of the way there anyways.
Yeah. Do you delve into like velocity tracking at all with your athletes or your coaching or your training yourself?
I would if they had a tracker or wanted to get one, like I would know how to do that.
Yeah.
I haven't, because I just started with a new company. I'm waiting to get a few more people on so I can show this great state of New York that I'm not operating at a loss by buying a tracker.
Got it. Because they're like $400.
Yeah, they can be pretty expensive depending on the unit you buy and like the software, and the software's still a little glitchy sometimes. Like they all have their own kind of some bugs and stuff.
Yeah. I put this in the outline. Do you have like a brief explanation of what fatigue is? Because I know that I've read some really wild papers about the differences of fatigue or like just the definition of itself. Do you have like a good way to explain what fatigue is? That negative training adaptation?
I mean, I think that's maybe the best way to explain it. It's just something that would take away from your preparedness or ability to express.
Yeah.
Whatever the adaptation is, because your aerobic capacity can be affected by even mental fatigue.
Sure. CJ, do you have?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a lot smarter than I am. I usually look at fatigue. I try and move away subjectively, especially in the CrossFit world, like, because everyone just thinks they can like operate at 100%. Most of the time they feel like that because they've never operated at 100% and they're always operating at 70 to 80. Yeah. So I just look at contraction volume and like what I'm riding specifically. And I just like, unless we have something coming up and we have to push through, like I let the day before, like based on the week that we've set up, I let the day before drive. Like I know they're going to be fatigued from these things, so we're just going to move. And I try and keep it as objective as possible, because some people do tolerate it better. It takes me a long time to really find out who those people are.
Yeah.
And for them too, because in this world, everyone thinks more volume is better, right? And so more intensity, beat your face into a wall. And then like, oh, I've been training for 3 hours a day for 5 days a week for 2.5 years and I feel fine. And I'm like, yeah, but you average 8 burpees a minute in a workout. Like that's just slow. Like just because you're doing it doesn't mean it's great. And so I try not to look at that, mainly because people have a skewed view of what fatigue is, especially in this sport. So I try to keep it of like, hey, I know you squatted heavy the day before. We're probably not going to be as effective here in this aspect the next day. So I try to keep it relatively objective and I just let the training define the fatigue until I really, really know the athlete or I know exactly what they're trying to prepare for.
Yeah. And I think that goes into too, like, since we're talking about periodization, that goes into your programming,
100%. Right?
Like, yeah, I would look at something and be like, okay, I'm going to put this on this day because I know the next time they train, they're going to have this. Or like, even in my program, like, I have it set up. So like my lighter days are earlier in the week and I do certain accessories to try and develop, like say my triceps or my shoulders suck. I have no middle delt, which fortunately it doesn't affect your big three very much. So I can just go ham on the volume for that. But like, I would look at, say like, oh, I'm going to do a higher rep, like, bench or like triceps or, you know, isolation exercise. So I probably shouldn't put that close to my like heavy bench day. Right. When I'm supposed to test an AMRAP.
I feel like as a novice coach, I found those things out the hard way when an athlete would be like, hey man, this is like, I'm doing heavy deadlifts. And then I also have some sort of Metcon that also has like high repetition deadlifts. And then the next day I'm doing good mornings. And also we're doing, you know, RDLs and it's like, all right, I mean, maybe the structure needs to be a little bit more mindful of all of these things that are taxing similar locations in a very small space.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of coaching is effing around and finding out.
So much. We can talk the science, but everyone responds differently. Like my training protocols look so different for every person.
Well, right. within a person, like I've done some videos on this and talked about it. Like, so like for squat and deadlift, I can do 6 sets a week and I'm making extremely good progress off of that. But like for my arms and shoulders, I'm like for my deltoid for growth, like I'm doing like 20 plus sets a week right now, versus like I can squat or I could watch you guys squat and my quads and glutes will grow.
Love it. Just your ways. That's so true. And you know, my comparison to that is like fatigue within training, like just like how I feel in a workout, something in a time domain, like my quads, even like on something very simple like a power clean, my quads are blown, which is a predominantly posterior chain movement, right? But I can deadlift super high volume close to my maxes for a copious amount of reps under fatigue and feel fine. I'll get sore, but I won't get fatigued within the training. And so it's so, but like you give me like 25 air squats in a workout, and I'm like I'm hurting bad, but it's so, but you know, deadlift 80% for 25 reps. And yeah, this is fine.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us, like a lot of coaches too, will do stuff inside of our own programs that I wouldn't give to an athlete because you can like, well, depending, because for a long time I couldn't coach myself worth anything. But you can look at something and be like, today, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make this change and then just adjust my program the later. Or today I'm feeling this, so I'm going to do this, even though I would tell my athlete not to do that.
Right, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so we laid down the variables. We laid down what periodization is and why we're doing it. And we touched on the stressors and adaptations. In the mentorship, we basically only talk about linear periodization or a linear program. Although I feel like there is, like currently I'm doing, well, I think I'm doing block periodization, although it probably is a linear periodization. Jay, can you like break down different, I guess, templates of periodization?
Yeah.
Block, undulating, linear, non-linear. Like there's so many words that I'm not quite 100% certain on.
Well, and they're not mutually exclusive. Like my program is, I run blocks of daily undulating periodization that has like linear aspects to it.
Right.
And then my blocks, like for me, like my block ends when I stop making progress for like 2 or 3 weeks, and then I taper and go into a different block. So my, I guess like RTS calls that like a time to peak, right? And athletes might have a different time to peak. So you, depending on what you're trying to do, right, you have, might have different block lengths. So block is like a specific time period of certain training where you, you kind of keep things consistent. You're like, okay, here's a plan for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, or sometimes you might just come up with, like RTS would do this, is come up with a week that of training and goes, okay, you're just going to repeat this until you stop progressing.
I don't know if I'd like that. Just like, yeah, you can do this until you stop. Like, oh, that's scary. Like, just like me coming in, like listening, and I'm like, oh man, what if I stop too early? What if it takes too long?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And for me, like the mine's like auto-regulated in a way that my last day of the week that I do heavy lifts, so my heavy bench and squat, I do an AMRAP, and then depending on how that goes, I change the intensity for the next week, whether it's decrease or increase. So linearly, you would, like linear, like you guys talk about, is just over time. Typically it's like it's progressing towards higher intensities with lower overall numbers of sets, to try and be more specific towards like a strength goal. And that's more commonly has been seen in Olympic lifting and powerlifting for a long time. There's reverse linear, which is the exact opposite, where you start at higher intensities with less sets and then do the opposite.
That feels wrong.
Yeah.
Personally, I can't imagine stepping into my gym and just being like, all right, we're going to hit a single at 10 today, and then we're just going to go downward from there. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
That feels funny. Yeah. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it.
Maybe that's like, you would do that, I guess, if you're working with sport athlete and they're like transitioning into regular seasons.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. I was trying to think of like what the purpose would look like, and you would get continued, I would assume you'd get continued more sports specific as the program went along. Yeah. Cause I mean, I feel like we do that somewhat in CrossFit, right? Like you hit your peaks and you continue to touch some heavier, but at some point you stop a linear strength plan, right? Yeah. Because the contraction volume starts to get too high with all the other aspects of the sport that we're doing. And so those increase, and usually those weights are much lower than like our strength weights. So maybe there's a little bit of that, like in prepping for, you know, a competition in, or, you know, quarterfinals or in season for the sport.
Yeah. And then, I mean, daily undulating periodization has been popularized like in bodybuilding and powerlifting, specifically through like Mike Zordos, who's at FAU. And he would call it the DUP. And there's different ways you can even do a DUP, like depending on the typical models are like, it's like hypertrophy, power, strength is a model that he worked on. It used to be like power. I think the former one was like power, hypertrophy, strength, but they found if you do more hypertrophy work before your strength day, then your strength day is impaired typically. And then you could do a weekly undulating where, you know, the week stays the same, but then it changes per week within a block. Daily would be you change your reps or intensity per day. So like for me, I have 4 training days. I train squat and deadlift twice a week. I train bench 3 times a week. So each day that I do those, it's a different, it could be different number of sets, could be different number of reps, could be a different intensity, something like that. Some variables change. And that's also sometimes called in research non-linear periodization, which is even more confusing for people sometimes. And coincidentally, even though it's kind of like that bell curve, like the where apparently not like DUP works really well for beginners, and then it works really well for more advanced people, and then maybe it's not as great for some people in the middle.
Is there, do you find in the literature that you've seen that there's like one best way to program or progress people?
I mean, I have my biases, but I don't know if there's more one way to do it, because it really would depend on somebody's preferences. I'd have to work with them for a little bit. I'd need to see their training age, what they've done in the past.
Right. But there's not like block periodization is the way to, like, there's not one just way to train that seems to be better than the other ones.
I think for the most part, undulating periodization is popular for a reason. I think that a lot, you know, not to just copy like barbell medicine and RTS too much, but I think it does seem to in CrossFit, or we probably learned that from CrossFit being popular, is that the more athletic you are, the better you seem to do at expressing certain adaptations. So if you have a better base of athleticism or train multiple things while keeping some specificity in there, like it seems to be that people either get stronger, they can get bigger, easier, like all those things are a little bit easier to happen.
Sure. Cool. Yeah, I think one thing that makes me feel more comfortable with programming is that it seems like consistency and just like checking that box every day without killing ourselves is probably like the thing to do over time, unless you're doing CrossFit, which, you know, is still confusing.
But you know, I'll like kind of hop into this and like the undulating periodization, right? I think that's, and there's a lot of aspects to it that, you know, fill it, because there's days where you just like are like, wow, I finished training and I feel great. I don't feel a lot of fatigue. And I think when you go into like maybe full blocks or like linear, like there's a point where it's like every day is super heavy, every day is fatiguing, and every day you're working to almost pure fatigue. And so the undulating, maybe I've never thought of it as like creating athleticism. I've always looked at it as like attacking a joint or like a movement with like different stressors. Mm-hmm. Right. So early on in my PT career, it was like I thought about like hitting the squat pattern and why people get stuck and why we use different squat patterns to break through sticking points, right? Or like a deadlift, why you would trap bar, or why you would good morning, or you know, those things, like they're almost identical patterns, right? They're accomplishing the same movement. You're lifting a bar from the ground up, or you know, eccentric loading, hinging over, and they just kind of like take this joint or this movement, and it's almost like an archery circle. We have like the center point, which is it, that's the goal, and then we just start to work around it, right? And so I think the undulating periodization does that obviously extremely well, because it's benching, but you're going to bench in three different variations, right, throughout the week, whether dumbbell or neutral grip or an incline or different volumes and things like that. And so maybe allows you to stay a little more fresh, getting more continued, more volume without taking yourself to those like full fatigues every training day.
Yeah. And there is like something to that too. Like there's been more stuff recently, like, because at least I've been able to keep up on podcasts. Like they talked about this on SBS, where if you take people and just do like full range of motion training, it appears like in research that you don't see as much of a benefit as if you did like full range of motion and partial. So like some variability in your training makes a difference. If I'm going into a contest, like I'm going to be very specific towards whatever like I think those tasks might be. But outside of that, I think it's important to have some of that variability for fatigue. It seems to help with motor learning. Plus it reduces monotony for an athlete.
Just so I have to say that, just like the enjoyment of what you're doing, right? Buy-in and just fun. That was like where I was thinking too. It's like, this is different. You don't do the same exact thing every day.
Yeah. And even like with volume, like you said, like you can use those different days to accommodate for fatigue and stuff. Or like, okay, I might have a day where somebody has a specific issue with, like, I don't know, just say their deadlift, like they can't get it off the floor. So I might have them do like a lower percentage, like deficit deadlift, or they have a bad habit of letting the bar drift away from them. So I might have them do like a pause deadlift, something like that.
Sure. I didn't include it in the outline, but I feel like.
Talk about it.
What's that?
You talk about it.
God dang it. I feel like talking about some sort of like decrease in training intensity or frequency in the form of like a deload or a pivot might be a good point to get across. I really don't do them very often, until maybe it's just been a while, right? Like 8 or 10 or 12 weeks or so. And somebody's like, can we change this shit up now? Right. Or where we're, you know, for example, taking singles at 8 and then doing back off sets at, you know, 85 or 90% for like 5 sets. And, you know, then it's like, all right, it's time to do the next thing, the next variation. I'll do some sort of just decrease in intensity and volume. And in my head, it's in an attempt to, like, I guess, dissipate fatigue and try and just get them ready for the next linear undulating blockization, whatever that may be. Do you guys do any sort of sense of that, or you just go off the feel of the athlete and if they feel okay, then you just keep trucking?
Yeah, I mean, you can, like, there, I just reviewed a bunch of stuff on this, like, in at least in powerlifting and in bodybuilding too. Like, you, if you manage, if you write your program good enough, quote unquote, like, I think it would take you time to figure this out, but you could theoretically go forever and not actually need to taper or deload. And that's what the research kind of supports. Like, most of the time, some athletes are just doing it because it's tradition. Like, you can, and there are some coaches that will just train into a meet and stuff. Like, they'll be like, okay, like, we would typically have you plan to do like heavy singles on this day anyway, so you're just gonna, that's gonna be your meet day. And because there's not a lot of literature that, unless you are specifically overreached, like, it could, sometimes it can be detrimental depending on how you do it to your performance.
And can you, what is overreaching?
Yeah. So overreaching is a period of time where your fatigue is significantly more than your fitness, to the point where your readiness is so low, like, you see a dip in your performance. So, like, for me, say, example, recently, like, cause CJ has a new one too, a new baby. My son was born on the 24th of October. And then, like, leading up to that anyways, I was having some decrements in performance. So then obviously my sleep has changed a lot. So it was like, it's just a natural time to taper or deload. So you would see a decrease in your performance, which means you've done in so much volume that you aren't able to currently develop more fitness and show and express that. So you need to do something to dissipate that fatigue. And in your periodization, say somebody doesn't have like their time to peak or whatever, or maybe you want to use like specific rigid time structures, you'd probably set up like, okay, this is X amount of time away from your competition, like for powerlifting or Olympic lifting. So I'm going to give you, it's usually like a 50 to 100% increase in their volume, their training volume for like a week. And then that produces enough fatigue that you see the decrement in performance. And then you run a taper for 2 to 4 weeks on average, usually.
Joe.
I'm just over here taking notes, man. I mean, I'm gonna be listening to this one on repeat just to make sure that I know what's up. Well, cool. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's all just an attempt to manipulate those positive and negative training adaptations. I think the hardest part about programming is like just the delay that needs to happen before you can actually see, I suppose, what's going on, because there's at least in the rehab world, a kind of knee-jerk reaction to make changes very hastily when things aren't going our way. But in my experience, and you know, with the coaching that I'm currently getting, and from the coaching I give, I try not to make those really like knee-jerk reaction changes to a program. And the waiting is the hardest part, but it does take, you know, some time. And Jake, I was reading that collaboration piece you did about volume, how I think the thing that I remember the most of that is, like you said, it takes about 4.5 weeks for some sort of something to happen, right?
Yeah. For strength gains, that seems to be the average. And like even muscle like gain, like Eric Helms and Omar were talking about this on Iron Culture, like there's a delay even with muscle gain, like something you've done potentially like maybe six weeks ago is affecting what you're able to do now.
Dang. My trip to Puerto Rico is screwing me over.
Keeping you with that 315 for 8.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Cool. So at this point, I wanted to get into the differences between powerlifting and CrossFit, although I feel like we've touched on those already. CJ, when I say periodization, if we were to look into your brain, what would that look like in your expert CrossFittery mind?
I like that.
CrossFittery.
I look at very similar to Jake, and it's like how you set up the year and like where we are in the year and what the goals are of the athlete, right? And so let's just assume this athlete's going to go to the CrossFit Games, right? So we know the lay structure of the year. Basically, the games are in the beginning of August. This athlete reaches out and, you know, it's September. So we're in full off season, right? So at this point, we're looking at the weaknesses of where they are. And the unfortunate thing with CrossFit is like this person might just be maybe a skills and gymnastics monster, right? But they're really weak and they're not that aerobic. It's like, shit, now we got to make them strong and aerobic, which is really hard. And they're going to counteract each other. And so, so looking at what they need to focus on, right? And very similar to any other types of training, is very non-specific, very specific just to the weaknesses and non-specific to the sport, i.e. like the tests that you'll see on CBS when you guys watch the CrossFit Games, because you know all the people listening watch the CrossFit Games too, or YouTube or whatever. Training doesn't look like that, and it shouldn't look like that. It does for a lot of people, right? Like the games are over, and then a lot of programs just like spend all of August like doing games workouts, and it's like that would just be like taking swings at singles for 6 weeks, right? It just doesn't make sense. You know, you're gonna for sure fall off. You're gonna miss. You're gonna have bad days. Maybe you get in there and you get 100% or 101% or 99% or something like that. But most of the time, it's not going to work that well. And so a lot of the off season, depending on the athlete, they could look like a full weightlifting, powerlifting cycle with very, very little aerobic work in it, right? Just to make sure that the athlete is still generally perfusing blood through their body efficiently, right? So we have to get the heart rate up. Still often, we can't just completely go away from it unless maybe you're like Haley Adams, who's probably one of the best aerobic athletes in CrossFit, but she's also the weakest. She could probably benefit from not looking at a running trail for 2 years, right? Most people have to train both because no one's that good somewhere, right? So off season, non-specific, focusing on the biggest weaknesses, and that kind of progresses almost reverse linearly to getting as close to the sport as we can and what that looks like, which is usually the more specific there. So it just depends. Like it's so varied per person. Most people need to be more aerobic, so they continue a general strength program in the off season, because we always want to make sure we're continuing maintaining strength or building strength, and then building that aerobic, whether that's like on a machine or a bike or whatever it may be.
Whenever I complain to people about programming for CrossFit, I'm always like, they just want to do everything and be great at all of them at the same time. And it's such a tall order, and looking at them and being like, listen, we have to focus on this thing for this period of time because you're not very good at it. And we just need to trust that the other things that you are good at are going to come back once we start to look at them again is a hard sell. How do you sell that?
Yeah, man, it's the most challenging thing, especially when the athlete's already been successful in the way that they've trained. Or at least they've had success, right? And so I use this like the bar graph analogy, right? So we have like our pillars, okay, which call it like aerobic capacity, gymnastics ability, and strength, right? And you can break strength, you can break all of those down a lot, but most of the time, you know, people are really good at two of those and not good at a third one. Maybe they're good at body weight, but they just don't have good aerobic capacity, or they're strong and they just don't run really well. So you take it as kind of like one is down here, one is up here. And even if this one came down 10%, but this one came up 40%, we'd be in a much better space, right? Because CrossFit, I guess like it's double-edged sword, is it really does reward a jack of all trades, right? You know, the term jack of all trades, master of none, is not a term of like the person is average at a lot of things. They're usually really good at a lot of things, and that's what CrossFitters are, right? But the ones who win will be really good at everything with very, very, very few massive drop-offs. But not, most of them, it's not the strongest athlete. It's not the most aerobic athlete. It's not the best at gymnastics. It's the one that's probably top five in all of those is who's going to win. T is an exception. She's an anomaly. She's better than everyone at everything, you know. But Rich wasn't, you know, and Justin Medeiros, the current winner, certainly isn't. Like, that guy doesn't win anything. He's like third every event, but he never has like a lower than 10th, right? And so when you can really explain it to them that way, it's like, hey, you can afford to like not run a 5-minute mile. You're 60 years old now, and you just don't need like that level of ability is so much higher than the rest of your competitors, but you can't snatch 100 pounds. This is like where it is, right? And this is where you lie. And so really painting that picture to them, I think, is the sell.
Now the two of you have had people that you've coached and worked with compete at the highest level, right? Mm-hmm. What is that? Does it like tickle your belly? Are you like, yeah, that's my athlete out there freaking crushing it? Like, what is that comparing to watching your child being born? Honest, like, what is that like?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, right? You know, I mean, I came into the sport as a fan, and I just have been fortunate to end up coaching, you know, over 10 athletes at the highest level. You know, I'm not coaching the individuals like Matt Frazier or anyone there. It's the masters athletes, but you know, it's the highest level, and it's pretty cool, right? It definitely, like, every time I get there and I get to be in the back and I can see everyone warming up, I'm like, this is cool. I'm here. You know, we're doing it. Maybe I'll feel a little different if I ever get, you know, an individual athlete that actually is like on TV kind of thing. I don't know. We'll see. But I think Jake has those recognizable names.
Yeah, Jake, what's up, man?
And for me, the biggest thing is like, because I was rehabbing them, so I wasn't like necessarily doing their full programming and everything. Like, I know how to do all that stuff. But for me, it was just like, okay, they're injured now. They have worlds in like 4 weeks or something like that. Worse. So it's like, what do we do? Right. And I've had some where it's been like, they, you know, it was cool. Cause like, yeah, like he said, like, I think it was like maybe the first time I was with the strength guys for worlds, I think like we had 11 people there. And 7 of them had worked with me at one point or another during their prep. So I was like, okay, this is cool. And like, I think maybe it wasn't, so it was like between 4 and 7, but anyways, most of them podiumed. So that was like really cool. And then like to see, for example, like Taylor Atwood, like have that one meet last year, yeah, 2021, where he just like broke every single like powerlifting like record that can be, like, he has like the highest dot score, like the highest, like he was the first person in his weight class to do like 11 times body weight. He was the first drug tested person to have over like whatever Wilkes score, right. Like all that stuff. So it's just like, you know, I was like comparing him to like, it's like if Tom, like, because most people that we talk to outside of our sports have no idea what this is. So I the example I gave for Taylor was like, I was like, so imagine like Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes or whoever, right? Whoever your favorite quarterback is, goes and throws for the league lead in touchdowns, like the record for the season. And then next year they come back and then they do it again, but like break it by like 10 more touchdowns. For a while, that's what he was doing, like with his deadlift. He would come out for a first attempt on deadlift and win meets, and wow, then his next two attempts were usually breaking his world records. So, and then there were a few other people like that. I've worked with a couple Hall of Famers. There's been a couple junior record holders. Some of the proudest ones though I've had were like the ones not even at World Games. They were, you know, like locally competing or national level, just because of the relationship I've developed with some of them, where it was like, this is really cool. Like, you couldn't even do like squats with a bar before, and now like you're setting up your own personal record.
Is that like, are you like, man, this is no big deal, this is easy rehab shit? Or are you like, oh my God, I have this machine in front of me that I need to make sure can get to the finish line and crush world records? Like, what does that feel like, either one of you? Maybe Jake.
All right. That's it's tough because like, you want to keep your biopsychosocial stuff in and stuff, but a lot of times, depending on the time frame, they need a black and white.
Yeah, more machine, like just this thing.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, okay.
It's like Ivan Drago.
Yes. Yeah.
I meant more like, because you want to talk about like the complicated and stuff.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
But then like, I hear this when you talk to like, when you see like Mike Taylor talk about stuff, because he's been in the military and stuff. Like,
sure.
When you're with high level athletes, and I think like, you know, special operators or military that are like active duty, like you need to be like, yeah, everything's like gray, but we're going to give you a black and white answer. Yeah, like, you have to go against what you would normally do sometimes, and like do stuff that like, I wouldn't do this in the clinic, but I'm going to recommend this to you because maybe you will get that 1% and that matters.
Sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, the few like top level athletes, because so I almost solely program performance now. I don't do a lot of the rehab stuff anymore.
Yeah.
But I started all this by just doing rehab only with higher level athletes. I was fortunate to just be at a gym where they just kind of came in droves. And so I got to work with a lot of them, and it was always like, it should have just been training adaptations. Like, you train like an asshole, this is why you're hurt. But you can't say that. Like, you can't just like tell them to stop, 'cause like, I'm this, you know, nobody in the corner that's like just a student or right out of school, and you know, they want me to, you know, to work on them, or like that's how they expect this like rehab thing to go. And I'm like, no, your shoulder hurts, you snatched heavy, you did 75 muscle ups for time and a 500 foot handstand walk. Like, I don't know what you want me to, like, I can't work your shoulder out. It's like, you know, but if they're getting ready for the games, well, you don't have a choice. It's what you have to do, which is something I would never have done in the clinic. Right. And it's like, all right, we're going to do all these, you know,
let me get my folding table out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. we're going to do all this like rehab exercises to make it better, when really it's like, you just like didn't do muscle ups for like 4 days.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
You're almost like up to proxy deload.
Yeah, but you can't say that, right? Like, you're not writing their program, you know what I mean? Like, you're just looking at it and like doing your best to like make sure they can tolerate it. And when you can't do that, it's very challenging, which is why I went away from like multiple cooks in the kitchen aspects to the higher level athletes, because your hands are just tied behind your back all the time working with someone, and like all you do is their rehab. It's like, they don't even do more shit, they need to do less shit.
One of the things you told me when we first started working together, you were like, we need to stop them.
Yeah, most of the time, especially the highest level athletes. Lower level athletes, they could probably add in some stuff because their volume is low, and you know, they could probably improve the way they move, and you know, more exposure is probably better. But the top level, 95, maybe even 99% of the time, it's like, they don't need to do their 30 minutes of rehab work that they do every day. They just did a little bit less of the aggravating variables to their issue, would probably be fine.
Right.
Yeah. I've had specific examples like within those, like a couple different ones too, like where I've had some people, because it's, you can give them like simple like changes, and because they're a high level athlete, they just like get better very, very fast, and those are great. I've had one where you know, he came to me where he was doing like 30 minutes of like warm-up stuff, and I was just like, just like, trust me, like, we're gonna get rid of a lot of that, we're just gonna do these couple things that you want to do for your warm-up. And then he was like, oh my god, I feel so much better, and like, I can tolerate my training. I was like, yeah, because you're doing a full workout before you worked out.
A statement that I used early on was like, stretching is stressing. And like, people that do a copious amount of passive and range holds and things, like, that's tough. Like, that's like, it feels good maybe like just after, right? You know, noxious inhibitory stuff and whatever, but that's a lot of effort. Like, it's challenging to do that and then get right back into 45 minutes of, like, you know, saddle posing or something. Like, dude, your adductors and your back is going to be crushed. Like, yeah, a lot of fatigue that comes in from doing all of that stuff. And I learned that the hard way from, like, living on K-Star and lacrosse balling my shoulders till, like, they were just numb. And then for some reason they were always sore, and then I stopped and they felt better. It was amazing.
Not to be a jerk, but can we just acknowledge the irony of him needing, like, a hip replacement?
And a knee replacement, I think.
I didn't even was know it that.
Yeah.
Knee replacement.
Not to be a jerk.
I think that all of that was prior. That was all, like, his kayaking days.
Fine.
Whatever. I think with his knee replacement, I'm pretty sure he still squats like 500 pounds.
All right. Well, I'll shut up then.
But yeah, it's a lot of irony for sure.
All right. Yeah. So I feel like we've laid it down in a good way. Thank you to all these brains. I do, Jake, have a few bonus questions that I've been sitting on, and I try to add some fun in. I'm a fun guy. I like to laugh. Okay. I want to add some fun in at the end here. So I have three questions. First, and CJ, feel free to answer as well. As professional dads, okay, where do the dad jokes come from? How do you develop? Is there a method to these awesomely lame jokes? Like, what happens here?
I mean, go for it.
Yeah. You know, typically what happens is when you, your wife gets, or partner, whoever it is, gets pregnant, or you go to adopt that kid or whatever it is, right? There's actually a flip that switches in your brain. And then all of a sudden you just, it's like Rain Man. And all of a sudden you start just developing all these dad jokes, and it's a skill you didn't even know that you were capable of.
Like dad strength.
Yeah.
Correct. I think that switch is also turned on. You don't care of how embarrassed, or like, you just can't get embarrassed anymore, right? Because you've been pooped and peed on and spit up on, like, so much, and seeming, like, looking dumb to the world of, like, thinking this is funny when it's not, goes out the window. Now you just don't care. Now it's like, boom, right?
Got it. All right, number two, this one is for Jake. I'm trying to educate CJ here on your ways. What is the key to giving your children protein shakes and getting them to drink them?
Oh yeah, we've talked about this.
Jake feeds his small children protein powder, which I'm intrigued by.
Yeah, my daughter loves chocolate protein, because, like, she sees me drinking it, and then she's like wanted what I have a couple times. And I just tell her, yeah, it's chocolate milk. And so she'll just ask me, she'll be like, yeah, I want chocolate milk. And she's like brought me my tub and been like, I want chocolate milk.
Amazing.
Sure. Yeah, you should have to lie to them all the time.
when does the creatine start going in?
Should be soon, actually. It's supposed to start while they're in utero, actually.
Oh, okay. Got it. And your she's on the creatine as well then?
That's what the research says, actually. It's like beneficial. Like,
supplement creatine to an infant?
Well, like, I don't know if they've done it on infants yet, because, like, the researchers that I've listened to and stuff, they said it's hard to get, like, approval to do, like, kids, but they've shown, like, in the pregnancy that it influences, like, a lot of things positively.
Huh.
All right, where's Parent at?
Yeah.
All right, last thing, Jake, you've been on Instagram forever. Your first post was 411 weeks ago. I just wanted to review some of the questionable hashtags that you used, and I wanted to get your take. I'm just going to list off six, and I want your immediate reaction. Number one is hashtag get big, hashtag eat clean, hashtag clean eating, hashtag chest day, hashtag aesthetic, and hashtag swolger. What do you say to that, Jake?
Well, I remember distinctly as being that Jake, just looking at which hashtags had the most ones and thinking, okay, which one's gonna make people look at what I post?
Mm-hmm. All right, very, very analytical still.
Cool. The Swolger one is funny because I wonder what I want to know which post that was on now.
Now, this is only a small sample of the, you know, the large number that was there. And so I think maybe you'll have to work Swolger back in to the hashtags that you use now.
Have you seen the ones that I use in my fitness posts? Like I have, because I have two like clusters I typically use. So I have like belts don't work, placebo belts, spine day, but that one's like not that unique anymore.
Got it. hashtag hell barbell. Hashtag rip gains. Anyway, Jake, this has been great. I appreciate it. Please tell people where they can find you. I know that you're offering one-on-one coaching now. Give us all the places to find you at.
I mean, still the best place is strengthinevidence_physio on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook, but if you add me, I won't accept your request. Add me on LinkedIn or Instagram, because I post stuff on Facebook I don't want most people to see.
Sure.
CJ, any parting remarks?
I got a dad joke.
Oh my God, this is like breaking news across continuum. Dad joke first.
How do you make a waterbed bouncier?
I don't know.
Add spring water.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I hope everyone listening, I hope that was painful.
Wow.
There's gonna be one every episode.
Let's go.
Make sure you put in the show notes so I remember.
That's right. When I post the clip, I'll post hashtag spring water and hashtag shoulder. Well, cool. If anybody had any questions, please DM all of us at the same time or not. Thanks for coming on, Jake.
Yeah, thanks for having me.